Hello, Aspiration Athletes, and welcome back to another edition of Aspiration Athletics Podcast. In this episode, I talk about body dysmorphia, the effects, the symptoms, and how to recognize all of these symptoms and to take action to help ensure that you can endure and continue to progress in your respective life and fitness journey alike. Additionally, I talk about how to jumpstart your journey into fitness. So if you don't know where to start, you're not sure how to begin, or maybe you failed in the past, I talk about all these strategies and more in this episode. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss it. Additionally, I'm going to provide the article that I've written, the step-by-step process of how to get started in your fitness journey today, how to make that declaration and set yourself up for long-term success. So if you're interested in that article and you want to get a hold of that, send me your email address so I can send that over to you. No charge. I'm here to help. I want all of you guys to have equal opportunity at the same enlightening feeling that I get during my fitness journey. So please don't miss out on this opportunity. Take advantage of it while it lasts, you guys. But aside from that, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to another edition of Aspiration Athletics Podcast Live. I'm your host, as usual, Devin Burnison, and today we're bringing you episode 18 and talking about body dysmorphia, how to recognize it, and dealing with these issues. And I think this is a special topic, and it's special to me because this is something I've personally experienced myself, and I think I speak for most of us in the fitness industry when I say that this is widespread. This isn't just an issue that fitness professionals are facing or competitors are facing. This is something that I believe our population in general is having problems dealing with. So I want to spend some time talking about body dysmorphia, what that looks like, what it feels like, some of the symptoms so you can recognize some of these triggers that are coming into place, and maybe you'll start to understand and recognize that you're more susceptible to this thought process than what you had thought before. So before I get into all of that, I want to first thank all of our listeners thus far, everybody who supported the show. You guys are phenomenal. I look forward every single week to make new episodes and to bring content to you guys. I've been getting some feedback on the episodes from some people that I am working with in person. Some people are clients, getting messages that are just, awe-inspiring, and it really, really drives home the message and why I continue to do what I do. So I want to thank all of you guys who have tuned into the show and listened to the message and listened to some of the topics that we've been discussing. I really feel like these are all topics that pertain towards not just, especially being body dysmorphia and some of the habit change topics we've talked about before. These are all things that really the fitness industry doesn't shed a ton of light on. They want to sell this aspect of, a supplement or a pill or a quick fix that simply isn't applicable to the majority. These are all just supplemental to what, good habits, positive behavior, those help facilitate these results rather than addressing, body dysmorphia and some of these other, you know, mood disorders, that's kind of the root of the issue that we need to discuss rather than what supplements are going to help us further our progress. So I'm a firm believer right now in, you know, the more that I continue to grow in my profession, excuse me, and the more that I continue to understand the phenomena that is the human body, you know, a lot of the success that people see within their training program or within life in general, a lot of it is attributable to that behavior aspect or that perception. You know, your outlook on yourself, your outlook on your efforts, those are what play a huge role in how you feel about your endeavors and ultimately how you view your success and quantify that. So kind of kicking things off about body dysmorphia, you know, let's start to kind of go over an overview of what that really means. So body dysmorphic disorders characterized by the excessive concern over either minor flaws in maybe appearance, or, you know, maybe this has to do with a certain weight on the scale. So these kind of concerns can cause significant distress and problems within metabolic functions. So understanding that how you, going back to these stressors, how they play into your motivations, right? You know, we talk about intrinsic motivation, that internal drive to continue to progress, and that external motivation, that you know, environmental reward of, you know, maybe letting that pant size be a marker or milestone of success, getting to a smaller pant or dress size. You know, that's something that we look at as external or internal rewards. And now we're getting down to, you know, how these kind of reward systems and channels of thought can become dangerous when you're fixated on certain aspects of appearance or certain aspects of body weight. You know, people are looking at these characteristics as flaws, and that's really further from the truth. You know, a lot of the time individuals, and I've experienced this myself, you know, there's this extreme thought process preoccupying this aspect of physical appearance. So this, you know, this persistent belief that you're ugly or you're not good enough, you're too fat. You know, these are common thoughts with someone who's exhibiting, you know, these kind of body dysmorphia disorders. And they often are accompanied with shame regarding their appearance in perpetuity. You know, these people are commonly in front of a mirror trying to point out their flaws, or maybe they avoid a mirror completely. You know, a lot of the time it can look like excessive grooming, constantly doing your hair, constantly having to throw on makeup. Maybe the individual is constantly seeking reassurance that they look the part or that they feel valued. They need that validation. And this really becomes dangerous when it is taken a step above and people start comparing themselves to others. And that's something that I think is more common than what a lot of us realize is, especially with social media platforms and the prevalence of social media in general, you know, this aspect of comparing each other to one another is completely, it's completely damning to some people. You know, we live in a world, in a society where we're all interconnected now. So it's very easy to you know, imagine that you are much like myself, okay? So when I first got into bodybuilding and I first got into fitness, it was around 2014, 2015. So this was prime time for Instagram. This was prime time for, what's another big one? Twitter. You know, a lot of these pages that are, or platforms rather, that are based upon kind of the individual, right? And you're really able to take a dive into each person's life. This excessive comparing appearance and attributes to one another and ourselves is ultimately what's causing a lot of these body dysmorphia and you know, a lot of this depression issue, because people are comparing themselves to people that they don't relate to. You know, you can't compare yourself to the Ronnie Colemans of the world as you're just getting started in your fitness journey. You're being way too hard on yourself, and those expectations are totally unreal. So I think that's definitely a reach. When you're comparing yourself to others, you don't know what the other person is facing in their respective fitness journey, in their respective lifestyle journey. And this goes just in general. This is life advice. Once you limit or completely terminate the need to compare yourself and your successes to others, you feel liberated in a sense. And I talk about this in previous episodes, and it holds true because I've had to do this myself. Once you stop comparing yourself and essentially trying to, stop keeping up with the Joneses type of deal, you're really freed from that obligation to look or feel the part. And in turn, you really start living a more giving lifestyle, a more free lifestyle. You start living for you rather than for other people. So I think that's a big aspect to hone in on, is this comparing appearances, or comparing just comparing attributes in general. You know, it's never me versus the other guy. It should never be that way. So understanding that if you are exhibiting some of the attributes that, you know, we're discussing here, whether it's comparing yourself to another, you know, seeking reassurance, excessive grooming, excessive cosmetic use, you know, excessive examination in front of a mirror or aversion of a mirror, or shame regarding your appearance. Maybe you're experiencing depression or certain social anxieties, or this kind of desire or initiative to correct your flaws with maybe surgery, or like I mentioned earlier, just, you know, copious amounts of cosmetics and makeups. Those are unhealthy ways of channeling, and essentially it's a band-aid on the problem. It's short term, and long-term damage wise you're changing your psychology that way. I talk a lot about behavior change, and especially in my previous episodes. So this aspect of behavior change, it starts with how you feel about yourself, and it's this kind of this perceptual outlook on your efforts and on your life in general. So, you know, that kind of leads me into my next point, is what is it, you recognize that you have some of these considerations when regarding body dysmorphia. So you're exhibiting a lot of the behaviors and maybe social anxiety or social pressures to correct flaws within your appearance, or, you know, seeking reassurance or justification, you're avoiding mirrors, so on and so forth. You know, how do we begin to address some of those concerns? And I really think it starts with educating yourself about your current condition and kind of where you stand on the spectrum. So I think that it's very much so a sliding scale. You know, you're going to find that
At least in my experience, there's been points where I've been hyper aware of my appearance and hyper aware of, I guess, the need or the desire to fulfill certain cultural norms or societal norms or expectations, right? So I think understanding that if you have that intervention with yourself, you know, and educating yourself about the condition at hand and understanding, you know, the characteristics that I had mentioned earlier about, you know, refusal to appear in pictures and this depression and social anxiety, you know, your shame regarding your appearance, educating yourself on what body dysmorphia and those characteristics looks like is going to allow you to understand that the feelings you have are associated with this cognitive and behavioral disorder. So this allows you to kind of pay attention to these warning signs, as I like to call them, that allow you to see the triggers that are going to enhance those symptoms, and you're able to then kind of uncover what these triggers are and how to handle those responses and effectively. So I'm always a proponent, or I always preach the aspect of physical fitness and being more active as a way to treat certain cognitive disorders. I think it's a necessity, and that's not just behavioral disorders. That's cognitive disorders alike, and many disorders in general. I think that physical activity and uptake of physical activity is going to certainly turn that sliding scale in your favor a bit more. Being of which, you know, physical activity is able to help ease a lot of those symptoms, because of the kind of dopamine response and excitatory chemicals in the brain that are desired, right? So physical activity, in essence, really for somebody that has never gone through it before or somebody that's new to fitness, they're gonna feel a little bit different than I do in my workouts. And that's to be recognized. That's to be understood. You know, when you first get into fitness, your body's kind of in that alarm state. So when you're putting all these stressors on it, it can seem like more trouble than what it's worth. But the way that I look at it, in the way that your physiological responses happen to be, is that, yes, the body is under extreme stress, right? But your body adapts to the stressors that are placed on it. And I want you to think about that for a second. Your body adapts to the stressors that are placed on it. We are constantly evolving, folks. And this aspect of evolving and adapting has been a part of life for human beings since the start. So what I'm going to go into next is basically that if you can get your body to adapt to stressors and loads placed on it to be able to handle weight, or to be able to handle changes in direction easily, or to be able to handle rough terrain at a physical capacity, what does it mean for our cognitive abilities? You know, are we at more of a disadvantage there, or can we start to manipulate our outlook on our efforts? So I always go back to this point because I feel like it's the most important. Simply put, most people are not confident in their efforts. And this lack of confidence and motivation in their efforts is ultimately what attributes to the quitting early on, or having that loss of faith in themselves. And I guess the biggest thing that I can say with that is much like understanding that you're going to be sore in your first workout, you have to understand that this is not a quick process. So I've said this before and I'll say it again. Anything worth having is going to be hell to attain, and it's going to be hard work. Now, that being said, the more work that you're putting towards something, the more the reward is, right? Like that risk-reward ratio, right? The law of diminishing returns type of deal. This risk-reward ratio being where, you know, you're putting out utmost effort physically. That reward of seeing weight loss, or that reward of just feeling really good after a workout, is earned. It's earned. But it takes putting your body through a ringer, in a sense, right? By putting it through these physical stressors so that it can adapt. And like I've said many times before, sound mind, sound body, you guys. You have to train your body, and in turn, you're training your mind. So, what about body dysmorphia? Because this isn't just affecting average individuals who are just getting started in their fitness journey or maybe have never exercised. This is affecting athletes too. So let me talk about my experience with body dysmorphia. I was just finishing up my bodybuilding prep for MPC at the, which one was that? That was the Simmons. It was Simmons in 2017. So 2017, this, I went to the bodybuilding classic physique show, and it was the John Simmons show. It was May 19th, 2017, yep. And the whole, it was an 18-week prep, and I had started at the new year. So throughout this process, you know, I had started at like 230 plus pounds. I was 20% body fat or more. I had always been, you know, a bit of a strength athlete, but I had this terrible negative outlook on my physique and my aesthetics. And the more I got into bodybuilding and I got into having to be in front of a mirror, it wasn't that I got more comfortable with my aesthetics. If anything, it further drove home the disorder that would be eventually become body dysmorphia. You know, I'm constantly taking pictures in front of a camera and in front of my mirror and sending these progress pictures to my coach at the time. And, you know, although I was seeing changes week to week, my perceptions towards my efforts and my perceptions towards my progress were askewed. I was always wanting more, and I was always trying to push the pace. So, you know, around this time in prep, when you're looking for every advantage possible to get down to the leanest body mass index and to get down to, you know, a comfortable body weight and still maintaining a good amount of muscle mass, it becomes an obsession because you're so hyper concerned and hyper aware of your physical appearance that you're going to do anything it takes to either further that progress. And that was the case in my experience. So it was around the time I was probably like 3 or 4 weeks out from my show. And, my teammates are asking me, you know, what I'm taking. And I'm like, what I'm taking? Well, they're referring to anabolics. And, you know, this is a whole nother episode that I'll go into some other time. But essentially, what I'm getting at is, it was never good enough. The efforts that I was putting in no matter how excessive or how intense or how frequent, you know, training 7 days a week and just overloading the body, excessive amounts of cardio, too much stress. And it was this askewed vision and this askewed perception that I had on myself. And it was around this time where, you know, by all respects, I was looking great. And, you know, I was getting down to that single digit body fat percentage and I was just not satisfied. And I remember that there were times when I would, you know, I would just be in public and people are telling me that I looked great and that I was, you know, just ripped out of my mind or whatever. And none of that seemed to help, because if I couldn't convince myself, then I didn't believe it to be true. And this is where this sickness and this disorder really can be damaging, is because you start to shut out reason and rationale. And you start to buy into any avenue that's going to give you an edge. So an instance for bodybuilding, that was anabolics. That was pro-hormones. And, you know, it was a huge social pressure at the time to stay natural. Because internally, that was something that, a promise that I wanted to keep to myself throughout this process. And I was now being confronted with the opportunity to take my physique to the next level. And that's something that I know a lot of competitors, most competitors, if not all, are facing, is that kind of fork in the road to where you recognize how far you've come. You feel that it's not good enough. You feel that there's still more to your potential to be untapped, and you're looking towards outside means to acquire that. And what I can tell you from my experience is I'm very glad that I took the high road and took the natural road. It was much more rewarding for me that way long term. You know, getting on stage with a lot of those guys that were using certain performance enhancers, it was difficult at the time. You know, I felt like I didn't belong with the athletes on stage. But in this long-term progression, looking back now, I'm so thankful that I stuck it out, because ultimately, you know, my perceptions towards my efforts moving forward changed. So after everything was all said and done and I finished my prep and I decided to take a step away from bodybuilding, I was able to put a lot in perspective. And when you're chasing this goal of being the leanest on stage or the biggest on stage, and you're comparing yourself to others, you get trapped in this cyclical process of negative talk and negative thoughts, feelings, and actions. And that was something that I really was, myself especially, was really getting caught up in. And I know a lot of competitors, first-time competitors especially, they have the same exact experience. You know, this aspect of having to fulfill the expectations of your coach or your judge that you're going to be standing before. Those are all really high stress environments. And when you're told, and I mean, this is the hardest part, ladies and gentlemen, you spend 18 weeks getting in the best shape of your entire life, and to spend a whole 60 seconds on stage to be judged on your appearance and to be nitpicked on your smile or your hairstyle or your vascularity. Like, something about that to me just doesn't sit right. So when we talk about these triggers and we talk about the onset of this disorder of body dysmorphia, think about the environment that you're putting yourself into. You know, I was coming from a background where I was a highly decorated wrestler in high school, and I performed at a high level, but I was not this star-studded athlete that was just super ripped. Like, I looked like I enjoyed myself, right? And I felt better about my outlook then, my self-outlook then, than I did in the best shape of my life. So what changed there? You know, what caused me to feel so concerned about my look and appearance? And it was because I placed value in what others thought of me. I placed value into what others thought of me. So I want you to think about what I just said for a moment. And I want you to apply this to yourself. Do you think and hold value into what others think of you? I mean, really, think about it. You know, let's say you were to quit school tomorrow, right? You're in college, you decide to drop out. What are mom and dad gonna think? And if you truly believe in the decision that you committed to, how is their opinion going to affect you? How is their judgment of this situation going to affect you? So relating this back to body dysmorphia, it's having this rationale to be able to recognize where you've, for one, you have to, again, going back to this whole bodybuilding experience, because this was my intervention that I had to progress through, because this was a huge hardship in my life. And I know a lot of people are experiencing this on a daily basis. And, you know, it took recognizing through looking at past photos and seeing the progressions throughout the 18 weeks, looking back at some of my journal entries, looking back at some of my check-in pictures, like, all of that really reinforced the aspect of my perceptions of my efforts and the outcome. So I felt like I wasn't doing enough, but essentially I was accomplishing great feats every single day. And this is what I want to point out is there are two outlooks on the same thing, you guys. And this is where the kind of the glass half empty or half full comes into play, is because you can easily get caught up in, well, I don't think my physique is good enough because I don't look like Ronnie Coleman, or I don't think I'm strong enough because I don't lift as much as, you know, Larry Wheels. And that's a dangerous thought process, because none of us are built to like. None of us are the same. We're all very unique, not only in our physiology, but in our mentality, in our chemical makeup. So every venture, every situation is different when it comes to this aspect of, you know, especially physical fitness, right? Some people have certain thyroid disorders, or some people have, you know, missing appendages. Like, there are certain things set in place, you guys. You cannot continue to compare yourself to other people who are potentially on performance enhancers, or maybe they have a professional chef that's cooking all their meals. Like, this is what I believe social media has plagued us with, is, you know, rather than looking at these individuals who are doing phenomenal things, rather than just recognizing it and taking that into consideration, but not comparing. So I guess what I'm trying to say, folks, is don't stay off of social media, because I feel like that's unrealistic, and I'm all about practicality. But I think that going off of that aspect of practicality, you need to be more practical with yourself. You need to stop being so hard on your damn self. You guys are so hard on yourself and your efforts. Yes, fitness is extremely hard. Fitness is a privilege. It's a privilege to be able to get up and run. It's a privilege to be able to bench press. It's a privilege to be able to squat. It's a privilege. So when you're able to do these things, you should really look at it as, I'm very thankful that I'm able-bodied enough to, you know, handle a 225-pound load on a squat versus, wow, I wish I could get 405 because then I'll be accepted amongst the bodybuilders. That's not a healthy way of thinking, folks. And I know that because I've been there. I've been that power lifter. I've been that bodybuilder. And I'm now that Olympic lifter. And what I can tell you is between each of those sports, each of those endeavors, it's so easy to compare yourself to the best without ever realizing that, for one, you just aren't recognizing your progress. You know, it speaks volumes to be able to see where you're at in a current point in time and then recognize that you want to progress, and then coming up with a plan on how to get from point A to point B rather than, you know, seeing what worked for Ronnie Coleman and then trying to emulate it. And this is where I talk about being aware with yourself, this self-awareness aspect, right? This self-awareness aspect, having these internal interventions to be able to discuss with yourself what you're feeling, what you're thinking. How rational is it? How practical is it, right? Like, sometimes I have to stop myself in the middle of a lifting session, and I'm a fitness professional. So, you know, I experience these issues too. So it's not just everyday people. You know, it's not just you. It's not just you, Carol, or you, Bob, who are just, you know, maybe going to class every morning, but you wake up and check yourself out in the mirror and you just, you know, you shy away and have this internal pain. It's not just you. You know, we are experiencing this at a mass level. These are fitness professionals. These are athletes. It's not just you. So, you know, this is a very widespread problem. It's something that I think starts and ends with the individual. And it's never a one-size-fits-all approach. Like, I can't sit here and tell you that every aspect of recognizing this disorder and every step and method to assure that, you know, it's going to be handled is going to work for you. A lot of that is having the conversation with yourself. And I talk about this in other episodes too, is that intervention aspect. And you've heard me mention that a ton, because you have to really be hyper aware of your thoughts and feelings towards any effort, right? Any effort, any venture. And that's kind of where I'm going to segue into one of the most important pieces of this discussion today, which is how to jumpstart your journey into fitness. So a lot of people are, especially now that fitness is kind of getting more popular or more accepted, I would say. I wouldn't say it's getting more popular. It's getting widely accepted. And I think with that is, you know, an incentive to take the best approach necessary based on the individual, based on the internal and external motivators to get started into fitness. So you're just rising out of bed and you decide that you're going to get fit today. And just like you've decided to commit working hard and adhering to the protocol you set in place, there's just one single problem. You got no clue where to start. And that's okay, because I was there as well. I was in that point in my life as well. I had just finished wrestling my senior year of high school, and I wrestled my last match that I would ever wrestle in my life. And I didn't know it at the time. I had no clue at the time that I wouldn't be continuing in college. But I was there at that point in time thinking to myself, what am I gonna do? As soon as the match was over, what am I going to do? I have no clue where to start after this, because no longer was I in a facilitated practice environment where coaches are giving me, you know, exercises in place to keep myself healthy. I had to come up with a plan. So maybe this is you, and you hurry to your computer and you're anxiously grabbing your phone and you're Googling how to get into shape, and you see just a ton of websites and all these different resources promising to bring you the best results and promising to bring you goal attainment. And it starts to get confusing. I get it. There's so much to different modes of training: CrossFit, bodybuilding, boot camp, powerlifting, and then different diets: vegetarian, keto, Mediterranean, paleo. Like, it all sounds foreign. It sounds like hieroglyphs. It's all confusing. And then you start asking yourself, how am I supposed to make sense of all this shit? And the truth is, there's no surefire way that works for anyone. And everybody's body is unique. So it's about finding the solution for you that's individual for you. So what I'm going to do for you guys today is I'm going to be breaking down step by step the do's and don'ts of getting into shape. And if you're completely lost on this whole premise, right? If you're lost on this whole discussion, I will leave links to a free article, my gift to you, on how to jumpstart your journey into fitness. And all that I ask in exchange is you send me over your email so I can send that copy of How to Jumpstart Your Fitness Journey to you guys. So without further ado, you know, let's kind of talk about what the first step is when understanding that you want to make a journey into fitness. So the first step is making a declaration. So most people around January make these resolutions. And I hate the word resolution because I don't feel like it holds enough weight and incentive to the goal at hand. So I believe in this aspect of declaring what you are going to set forth to do. So you really have to look at it as waking up and saying to yourself, today's the first day of me living a long, healthy, and fulfilling life. Putting those positive thoughts in your mind at the start of your day are going to set the precedence for the rest of the day. And then you start to think about, you know, what were your past endeavors regarding kind of your journey into fitness, and how much success did you see? Understanding what mistakes you made along the way. So once you've identified what hasn't worked in the past, that allows you to kind of formulate what your first step is going to be moving forward, and it helps narrow the scope of at least training modalities of or certain executions of how you go about this that you've already tried that don't work. So you can kind of use this process of elimination. So you can take these three steps to ensure your success. And one is, you know, creating this knowledge of knowing how to get started. So what does it mean to be able to get started? Like, what does that look like? It simply means making that declaration, making that commitment, having the know-how of, well, and not just the know-how, but the will to take it upon yourself to learn some of these principles set in place. And the next step is to empower. You got to recognize your why. Recognize what's brought you to this point in time and this mentality of wanting to make change for yourself. And then lastly, the last step is reinforcement. So maybe having an environment that you surround yourself with people who support your endeavors. So if you combine these three principles, you're going to have a far better chance at being in the best shape of your life. So I want to start with this aspect first of picking what's called SMART goals. And these are goals that are highly specific in which you want to achieve within your efforts of training that are going to allow you to plan the steps necessary to achieve those goals. So for example, somebody that wants to lose, you know, 15 pounds and going to the gym once a week for the next, or excuse me, going to the gym, you know, three times a week for the next, you know, 4 to 6 months and eating an extra vegetable a week than they did the week before. That's an example of a highly specific goal, right? I want to lose X amount of weight by executing frequency in the gym, you know, X amount of times a week. And for the next X amount of months, I want to eat more vegetables than what I do now. Notice the dialogue here, the verbiage here. I'm going to lose X amount of weight. I'm going to go to the gym X amount of times. And by doing that, I'm going to, so like, it's this aspect of that declaration, right? You're having that conversation with yourself of, I am going to do these things rather than I think I'm going to try to, or yeah, I really want to, or I've really dreamt of. Those are all empty thoughts, right? They're kind of here and gone within the moment. And I've mentioned this in episode one, and if you guys want to go back and listen to that, it's this aspect of creating an emotional connection to the goal at hand. So an example of a bad goal is I'm going to walk a mile every time that I go to the store with my kids. That's not a goal. That's not a SMART goal. That may be a goal, but that's not a SMART goal. With our SMART goals, we want to be as specific as we can. And this, by knowing what we want to accomplish during the course of our training, this is going to allow us to then plan out the schematic or the steps accordingly to achieve those goals that we set in place. So somebody that wants to start a business, they don't begin by just, you know, developing a logo and hoping that they can sell product. You know, a successful business startup requires this well-written business plan, and it has a calculated plan of action of steps in place to successfully reach that goal of hopefully opening and operating soundly within the business. So now it goes into habit setting. So what kind of habits do you have? You know, becoming familiar with the habits that you have in place right now, are they helping you reach your goal, or are they hurting you from reaching your goal? So set yourself up for success by utilizing tools that are going to help you hold yourself accountable for taking these necessary actions set in place. So maybe you're setting phone alarms. Maybe you're using apps that are available on the app store. When I first started my fitness journey, I was always using some sort of method of creating a behavior contract, and I loved using that. I still have the behavior contract that I made 2.5 years ago before I decided to take a leap of faith into you know, what would be my career in fitness. You know, I'll leave that in a link below that you guys can check out, because I feel like that's so necessary. You have to make these declarations. You have to make this promise to yourself. And I feel like that's where a lot of you are scared. That's where a lot of you are fearful, because you're afraid that if you promise yourself something and you don't follow through, that you'll be deemed a failure. Right? Or you'll be deemed too lazy. But what you're not understanding is that's the same driver that's going to continue to push you through those things. So, this aspect of a behavior contract that I signed myself, you know, I agreed that I was going to do everything necessary to put myself in a position to be the best fitness professional that I could be. So, under those terms, what that meant was continued education. What that meant was the pursuit of, you know, strategies and constant hyper awareness towards the objective at hand for myself. You know, so you make these interventions, these goal setting, habit setting kind of, you know, interventions, right? And then for one, I mean, understanding that it's a journey, right? So I talk about this as a fitness journey. It's not a destination, folks. It is not a destination. It is, and that's the problem, I think, a lot of the time, is too many people, they don't value the journey. They just value the destination. They value the end goal. And once they get it, and this happens in life too, and I'll make an analogous example here. But once they get it, they don't know what to do next. And these are people that end up putting all of the weight back on once they lose it, is because they are not placing their values in the right place. So, you know, the same can be said for individuals who are extremely wealthy, right? Some of the wealthiest people I know are also some of the most unhappy. And it's because they place their value and happiness into tangible things. And when you can, or when you have everything that money can buy, what's going to make you happy, right? Is it that attainment of another tangible item, or is it something that's going to fill your cup internally? And that's kind of my point here, is that we want to create an emotional connection with the goal at hand, because it's going to further drive home that habit change of being able to endure it consistently and frequently. So, you know, what about, you know, identifying weaknesses? So maybe you failed in your past endeavors and you decide to take a couple of days to recover and you lost the motivation to continue. So what happened with the way that you were training? Was it boring? Is that why you couldn't return to it? Was it too intense? Was it taking up too much time? So whatever the case is for you, it's imperative to your success that you take the initiative to identify what you didn't enjoy or simply wasn't allowing you to. So this weakness and identifying weakness within your perceptions towards your efforts, what was it that caused you to feel a loss in motivation? And recognizing that stimulus is going to allow you to manipulate it for future endeavors. Because we want you to be on a term of long-term success, not short-term, not just getting to that goal and then reverting back to, you know, gaining 100 pounds again. So, you know, ultimately, what it comes down to, folks, is as you're noticing throughout, you know, most of these examples here, is a lot of it starts with that conversation with yourself. And I'm always going to revert back to that because it's so important. If you aren't counseling yourself, in understanding kind of what your thoughts, feelings, emotional responses are, then you have no idea how to, for one, recognize the triggers and then work to essentially dissociate yourself from them. So it's so imperative that we have this conversation with ourselves, because we owe it to ourselves to be able to look in the mirror and be happy with who we are. Or to take a couple days off of training, for God's sake, for those of you that are so obsessed with your look, and to enjoy a weekend with your frickin' family. Like, these are real issues, folks. And I get so upset and passionate about it, because even people like myself who have worked so hard to spread a good message, I was caught in these things before. And it is so, so unfortunate to be a victim of your own mental outlook or self outlook. It's fatiguing. It's degrading. And if you aren't careful at understanding what the triggers are, you can very easily slip into anxiety and depression. And for those of you that are experiencing moods or modes of anxiety or depression or mood disorders, my last episode is a good resource to refer to on how to handle some of those stressors. And what you'll find if you listen to that episode in conjunction with this one is that it really always comes down to the simple fact of having the intervention with yourself. Change starts from within, and it's sustained and facilitated externally through our environment. So how you think and feel create the landscape that is your reality, and how you act in accordance to the environment and the reality you're in is what facilitates habitual change. So I want you to think about that for a second. It's powerful. How you think about your efforts is powerful. How you think about yourself is powerful. How you think is how you feel. And how you feel is how you act. So when we recognize that things aren't going the way we'd like to in our lives, now we start to have this conversation with ourselves. What am I feeling towards my efforts? It can seem like a rabbit hole, right? To where there's no way out, but there is. And it starts with changing your reality through your mentality. So, in essence, folks, that's all I have for you today. I'll give you something to think about here. I want to take a quick moment to send a shout out to all of the listeners thus far on the live show. Thank you guys for joining me this morning. Appreciate you being here. we're going to continue to do these live shows every week. And then I'm going to post-produce them and throw them on the podcast. So if you had the opportunity to be with me this morning, good for you. I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. And hopefully we can get some more feedback during the live show. Get some more inquiries, questions. I want you guys to be interactive with this whole discussion, because, quite frankly, you know, a lot of people feel this way. A lot of people are experiencing a lot of these stressors that I'm talking about, and they don't know how to handle them. They don't know what to do with it. They don't know what the steps are and guidelines necessary to help them live a better quality of life. So I'm going to leave you with that this morning, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to Aspiration Athletics Podcast on our live show. And I'm looking forward to talking with you guys again soon. So if you learned something, if you took something valuable away from this episode or any of the episodes that we have in our inventory, please go ahead and drop a donation. We have listener support now on our podcast, and I would love to see people subscribe. And like I said, if you found anything valuable off this show, drop a donation. I would extremely be grateful for that, because every donation goes towards supporting and enhancing this experience that is Aspiration Athletics. So thank you guys for tuning in, and I can't wait to talk to you again soon. Have a good one, and never forget, aspire to inspire.